Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of Full of Energy, an AEE podcast. I'm your host, Laurie Beth Nix. Today, we are talking with two knowledgeable industry leaders about the United States Inflation Reduction Act. We're joined by Jacob Goldman, Lead AP, who is the Chief Engineer and Vice President of Energy Tax Savers. He is a Bachelor's of Science in Chemical Engineering from the University of Buffalo and an MBA from the University of Maine at Orano. He is the co-author of numerous articles published in Building Operating Management, Worship Facilities Magazine, Unit Magazine, Green Lodging News, International Parking Institute, Corporate Business Taxation Monthly, and Thomson Reuters. He has presented to hundreds of corporations, architectural firms, engineering firms, accounting firms, local chapters of USGBC, IFMA, BOMA, and AEE, as well as national conferences of AEE, NFMT, NAMCOL, IGS, HPA, PIMA, and at the EMC conference as well. We're also joined today by the Southeast Energy Alliance's Director of Policy, Cyrus Bedwar. He has spent the early part of his career working in energy efficiency and sustainability at the local, state, and regional levels. He currently spends his time thinking hard about how we create the understanding, connections, and infrastructure needed to advance energy efficiency in an 11-state region where grits and/or sweet tea are in plentiful supply. Cyrus works with utilities, policymakers, and the energy efficiency industry because, well, they keep returning his calls. He's trained in the collaborative operating system, so he will make sure that others play nicely with you. And at 5'6 and 120 pounds, Cyrus is compact enough to take anywhere, leaving you no excuse to be without a small Indian man who grew up in Delaware and still sounds funny when saying y'all. What an introduction there, Cyrus. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Inflation Reduction Act is and why it's important for energy efficiency?
Sure, Lori Beth. First, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to talk about the IRA, and I expect to learn a lot from Jacob. I'm really looking forward to his remarks. So let's put the IRA in context. The IRA spends $369 billion on climate investments, which is the largest single federal investment in climate solutions in the country's history. So it's a very significant piece of legislation. But it is not working alone. It's part of a 1-2 punch that the federal government has done on climate over the past year or so. Last year, in November, the president signed the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, which also provided a lot of funding for clean energy and energy efficiency. So these two working together are going to help meet the administration's goals of reducing emissions 40% from 2005 levels by 2030, which is extremely important if we're to achieve our net zero by 2050 goals that the science tells us we need to achieve. I think what's interesting about these is that when the Infrastructure Act came out, we at SEIA looked at it. And interestingly enough, there wasn't a lot of energy efficiency infrastructure investment. There's a Department of Energy advisor named Tony Reams, who helps the U.S. Department of Energy think through energy equity issues. And he has been championing the phrase housing as infrastructure. When we think about our utility system, we don't often think about the homes and buildings on the end of the utility system that cause the need for building transmission, building generation, and building the other parts of the grid. But they are extremely important part of it. And unfortunately, the energy, the investment, Infrastructure Investment Act did not treat housing as essential infrastructure. The Inflation Reduction Act does in a big way. There's a lot of funding to make buildings more efficient, resilient, and healthy. So we're really looking forward to seeing the parts of the law unfold. I tell a lot of people at this stage, the Inflation Reduction Act is still new. There's a lot we don't know about it. And I'm looking forward to hearing Jacob offer his thoughts and expertise on some of the tax provisions. I'm going to share what I know about some of the other provisions. But this is a 10-year arc that we're in. So many of these provisions will operate throughout this decade and into next decade. So we've got a while to get things right. I think it's important to do things well. So that's what we're gearing up for.
Awesome. So Jacob, why don't you tell us a little bit of how not-for-profits and local governments can take advantage of the alternative energy tax credits?
I guess before I get into that, I'd just like to mention, I think Cyrus should write my bio. You know, his bio is much better than my bio. I think I'd like it if Cyrus wrote that. I guess to start off with, mainly I'm going to be talking about Section 48, which is sometimes called the investment tax credit or alternative energy tax credit. I'll also be talking about 179D, the commercial building tax deduction. Those are my expertise. Some of these things that, you know, specifically about not-for-profits and government buildings also relate to Section 45, which is called the production tax credit. I don't have a lot of expertise on the production tax credit, but this ability of not-for-profits and government buildings or some government buildings to get these incentives does extend to the Section 45 production tax credit type items as well. So amazingly, the Inflation Reduction Act came out with what's called Section 6418. And for the very first time ever, not-for-profits and state and local governments, and notice I said state and local governments, it is not available for federal government buildings. It's only available for state and local government buildings. Those buildings will be able to get a direct tax credit. We don't know exactly how it's going to work. They're going to file a document to IRS likely, and they'll then request the tax credit, these Section 48 alternative energy tax credits, and they'll directly be able to get the tax credit. So if you look at, you know, what has been the issue over long periods of time, let's say you're a middle school and you have this nice, beautiful roof that you'd like to put solar panels on. You had to find a vendor that was willing to create an LLC to do a power purchase agreement where they'll sell you electricity so the LLC could take the tax credit to reduce the overall cost of the project. Then those LLCs would have to have a tax equity partner. It was a very convoluted way for a middle school to put solar panels on their roof. Now a middle school is going to be able to put solar panels directly on the roof and get directly this tax credit. And the credit is unbelievable. There's the possibility that if for example, your middle school is located in the right spot in the United States, you can get a 50% credit. Half the cost of the solar installation could be paid for by the federal government through that Section 6418. And that extends to not-for-profits as well. So let's say you're a private university or you're the American Red Cross. If you wanted to put in solar, geothermal, ground source heat pumps, CHP, you know, any of these technologies, you can get very large tax credits directly. So this is a tremendous opening of these incentives to these not-for-profits and state and local governments.
So Jacob, do you think the IRA will spur the adoption of any particular technologies?
Absolutely. So some that come to mind, the first one that comes to mind is thermal storage. I don't know how many of your viewers know what thermal storage is, but traditionally what it is you take your HVAC system and make ice during the night, and then you use that ice to cool your building during the day. What it does is it shifts the load. So in the middle of August, for example, the highest load in the country is when that sun is like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. People are starting to get home. Their air conditioners are being turned on. It then shifts that load to the middle of the night because instead you're using the ice that you used the power from the middle of the night. And so the tax credit for thermal storage before the IRA came out was zero. There was no tax credit for thermal storage. So, and people were installing thermal storage projects, maybe not to the extent we'd want them to, but imagine what can happen if you can get a 30%, a 40%, or even a 50% tax credit on thermal storage, the amount of thermal storage that's gonna be installed in this country over the next 10 years. It's my belief that's gonna be dramatically ramped up with a 30, 40, or 50% tax credit. Very similar stories with ground source heat pump and combined heat and power. Both of those traditionally had a 10% credit. And so now it'll be a lot easier to justify those projects when you get a 30%, a 40%, or even a 50% tax credit. So it'll just be easier to justify those projects because Section 48 is going to pay for them. And then back to my comments before, they're going to be able to do the same thing for your not-for-profits and your state and local government buildings. So all those buildings are going to be able to take advantage of those new these technologies, ground source heat pump, CHP thermal storage, and implement them in their facilities because of these tremendous benefits that are being offered through this incentive.
Now, since we've talked about buildings and facilities here, I'm just curious, Cyrus, what sorts of things can homeowners take advantage of in this IRA?
Yeah, Lori Beth, that's a great question, and there's a lot. So the IRA disperses funding and incentives through kind of two different channels. And Jacob has talked a lot about the tax pathway, so that's what I'll start with. There have been on the books tax credits for home energy efficiency improvements for many years. They have not been very well known, taken advantage of, or frankly, kind of funded. They're not very great incentives to motivate homeowners to do the sorts of things that we've been talking about. But the IRA has changed a lot of that. In general, a lot of the IRA tax credits are for 30% of the available improvements, and they're capped at specific amounts depending on the improvement. So I'll run through kind of a couple of examples here. Obviously, the first thing a homeowner wants to start with is a professional energy audit. And that's when a trained or certified professional auditor comes into your home, runs a battery of tests, does a variety of inspections, and will determine what are the most effective improvements for that homeowner to make in order to save the most energy for the least cost, right? And they may not be the sexy things that we all want. We maybe want new windows or new doors. Those aren't necessarily going to fall high on the list because they tend to be more expensive and save less energy. But they will tell you where those improvements fall in the list. You're likely to see air sealing, which is definitely not an exciting improvement to make, but a very cost-effective one. Insulation is another one that we're likely to see, especially in older homes, which may not have it. So the IRA even gives you an incentives for the energy audit up front, $150 just to get that energy audit done. In most places in the country, your utility will also have an incentive to help you pay for that. So, for example, if my utility offers $150 incentive, and if I get a $300 energy audit, it's essentially free to me after you combine both incentives. Once you get through that report and start making the improvements, you get things like $600 for new energy efficient windows or skylights, $500 for doors. The real energy savers are going to be your heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. And the IRA does a lot for that. So $600 for efficient air conditioners, something here in Atlanta is going to be probably a popular item. And what's changed about the IRA from previous incentives is that we've introduced new technologies. Like Jacob was saying about thermal storage, that had not been incented in the past. In the residential side, heat pumps are the new thing. They're the new technology that is really being incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act. And what a heat pump is basically an air conditioner that does both heating and cooling. So mechanically speaking, it's the same as an air conditioner, but instead of just blowing cold air in the winter, it will also blow hot air. And they're just more efficient than an electric or gas furnace from an energy point of view. They use less energy to produce the amount of heat that you would need to keep your home warm in the winter. Up north, not so prevalent down south, there are also incentives for biomass stoves and boilers that meet certain criteria. When it gets onto the renewable energy side, there are also new technologies. So solar and geothermal have been longstanding energy systems that have been incentivized by the federal government through the tax code. Now we're adding things like microgrid controls. So a microgrid is essentially a mini version of the large utility electric grid that some communities are thinking about installing to provide power when the storm knocks out utility provided power. So think of what Floridians just went through with Hurricane Ian. If a community has a microgrid and has generation sources, they can keep their lights on and their heating and cooling on when there's a larger power outage. And so the Inflation Reduction Act incentivizes some of the technologies you would need to do that. And then similarly, storage. Battery storage was not a thing in previous iterations of the tax credit, but it has become, it has been included this round. And so people will be able to look at installing and getting a tax credit for batteries that they install in their homes, again, to provide power when the grid is down. So those are some of the things. We're also seeing tax credits continued for new homes. So if you meet an Energy Star qualification, so the blue Energy Star logo that a lot of people are familiar with from appliances can also be applied to your home. And if you're building a new home and it meets those standards, you'll get a tax credit for that. DOE, the Department of Energy, has come out with a new standard called Zero Energy Ready. So they're looking ahead into the future where they expect homes to be able to essentially power themselves through a combination of renewable energy storage and being very efficient to begin with. And so if you meet that certification, you get an even larger tax incentive. So those are some of the things available to consumers. SEIA also deals in energy efficient transportation. And the IRA has tax credits for electric vehicles. Many folks may be familiar with existing tax credits for those, both on the federal level and on the state level. Georgia had quite a generous one for many years, where basically you could lease a Nissan Leaf, over 3 years, and at the end of it, you would end up paying nothing for it. That's since gone away. But the federal government recognizes now that we're building a stockpile of used electric vehicles. And so in addition to getting tax credits for new electric vehicles, there is a tax credit for used electric vehicles, which is new and different. And so we'll see that secondary market start to move as these tax credits come into play. So that's the tax credit side. There are also significant rebates. So this is just a check you'll get for doing many of the activities that I described. This is a new program. It's similar to programs that states have run under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, but it includes many of the newer technologies I just described. And the difference with this one is it's segmented out based on the applicant's income level. So if you're below 80% of the area median income in your area, you are eligible for the most generous rebates, often two times what people, other people above 80% of the AMI. And then kind of if you're above 150% of area median income, you're not going to be eligible for many of these rebates. You'll have to look to the tax credits for those incentives. But those include many of the same technologies. One thing that they focus on is what's called the electrification of your home. And why is that important? Well, there are many experts out there who believe our path to zero emissions means removing fossil fuel end uses in the home, in buildings. So I personally have a natural gas furnace, as well as a natural gas fired water heater. So those who advocate electrification are saying, hey, Cyrus, you should replace those two things with electric equivalents. And that way you are not emitting any emissions in your home. And then as we clean up the grid and power it with clean energy, we're going to get those benefits all the way through the system. And so again, heat pumps feature very prominently. But there are also things that most people wouldn't think of. Your circuit panel may not be able to handle the load of all these new electric appliances. So the IRA provides incentives to upgrade those circuit panels in order to accommodate some of these new technologies. So I know that was a long list, but there is a lot in here and it's all very exciting. So I wanted to run through it as quickly as I could.
Sometimes I feel like we're, you know, infomercial commercials, like, but wait, there's more.
There's more.
The IRA is very much like that. There's so much in there. It's unbelievable. It's such great legislation. It's unbelievable what they put in there.
Absolutely. I agree.
I mean, now that you've given us the laundry list of the things inside the IRA, Jacob, do you want to talk specifically about Section 179D and what some of the major changes with that?
Sure. So 179D, traditionally, it's been around since 2000. It was actually passed legislation in 2005. Maybe I'll make a little comment on that, kind of back to Cyrus's introduction. So 179D came out in 2005. There was some key guidance that didn't come out till 2008. So you could get the deduction in 2006, but it took till 2008 for key guidance to come out. I guess what I'll mention here is, just because guidance isn't out doesn't mean you can't take the incentive. Once you have a law, you can actually take the incentive based off the law. It is quite possible that IRS might take a lot of time to come out with their full set of guidance. So the technique that a tax professional such as myself would recommend is read the law, take a conservative approach. But if your conservative approach says that you qualify and there's no guidance yet, you should still take that tax incentive. You should not just sit there waiting for guidance to come out. And you don't have to, because a law is on the books. So 179D is a tax deduction for commercial buildings, putting in energy efficient measures. It could be for new construction, could be for retrofits. One of the most interesting aspects of the law is for government buildings and government buildings alone. Traditionally, meaning before 2023, when IRA hits in, the only party that could take the government buildings tax deduction for 179D was the designer. What's interesting change by IRA is they extended that out for tax exempt buildings. So now your private universities, your private high schools, the designer can now get the benefit. Now they're the only party that can get the benefit. This is not like the alternative energy credits that I talked about before, where the middle school, for example, gets the tax credit. It's not like that. The only party eligible for this is the designer. What's happening here is that they're trying to incentivize designers to step up their designs, design more energy efficiently. That way, not-for-profits and government buildings will get the benefit of lifetime energy savings, and the designer will get this one-time benefit. So that's a big change. They opened up this designer benefit from just government buildings now to tax-exempt buildings. Another big, and by the way, these IRA changes start 1/1/2023. So it's for projects placed in service 1/1/2023. Another big change is that for retrofits, the way you qualify for 179D is you model your building against a reference building. The reference building has to follow a certain ASHRAE code. ASHRAE defines, there's an ASHRAE 2007, there's now an ASHRAE 2019, but the ASHRAE code traditionally that you had to beat was ASHRAE 2007. The law changes that. So in future years, and we don't know exactly when it's going to hit up, we think it'll hit up four years from now. But 4 years from now, you'll have to beat ASHRAE 2019. For the next couple of years, we're unclear how IRS is going to interpret the law. But we think there's a good case that you still have to beat ASHRAE 2007. So you have to show that your building is better than an ASHRAE building. In the old law, you could do that for separately, for lighting separately, for envelope separately, for HVAC. The new law is more holistic. You have to show that your overall building energy use with all the technologies in it is 25% better than the standard to get the minimum deduction, or 50% better than the standard to get the max. That's the new change for projects placed in service in 2023, that it's more holistic. You know, since 2006, it's been you could separately qualify for lighting, HVAC, and envelope. But retrofits now don't have to use the modeling method. Retrofits can use, you know, it's very similar. Well, it's not defined yet that it's going to be Energy Star Portfolio Manager, but it appears that what's going to happen is you're going to get your EUI, your Energy Utilization Index, for your building before you did your project. And after you did your project, you're going to do that by getting data from your utility bills for a 12-month period. You'll calculate your EUI before the project. You'll calculate your EUI after the project. If you get a 25% improvement there, you get the minimum deduction. If you get a 50% improvement, you get the maximum. That's only available for retrofits, but that's a very big change. The last major change on 179D is that you used to only be able to get the deduction, the max deduction, once for the lifetime of the building. There's now going to be a chance to reset. Commercial buildings, where the commercial building owner gets the tax deduction, that reset will be every 3 years. So every 3 years, if you do a new energy efficiency project, that new project can qualify for the 179D tax deduction every 3 years. For government and tax-exempt buildings, that reset is 4 years. So for the designer to get that benefit, every 4 years, if they do an energy efficiency project that qualifies, you get a reset and you can get another tax deduction for that project. So that was another major change in 179D. So the big news is designers of tax exempt buildings, not-for-profit buildings, they're going to be able to get a benefit for designing energy efficiently. They have been traditionally be able to get a benefit for government buildings. Now they're going to be able to get that benefit for tax exempt buildings as well.
You just talked about both the alternative energy credits and 179D. So what technologies qualify for both of those?
So solar, for example, is specifically stated that you cannot include the solar savings, at least specifically stated in the traditional law. You can't use the benefit of solar generation in your energy simulation model. You might, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but you might be able to utilize that in your EUI calculation for the new retrofit provision. We don't know how IRS is going to guide on that. We think they should include it, and we're going to advocate for that. And Cyrus and I are probably going to talk a little later how you can send comments to IRS on, you know, certain provisions that you'd like more clarity on. And that might be one of them. But the key technologies are the technologies I kind of spoke about before. So CHP, ground source heat pump, and thermal storage, those technologies can get an alternative energy credit, and they can qualify your building for 179D. So those three technologies, it's kind of, I wouldn't call it double dipping, but there is a way to get benefit from both of those, 179D and Section 48, for ground source heat pump, combined heat and power, and thermal storage. So it's another reason I think those technologies there's going to be a lot more ground source heat pump, CHP, and thermal storage over the next 10 years or so.
Cyrus, I'm just curious. I mean, we hear a lot about the buildings. You talked a little bit about home ownership and what they can benefit from, but are you planning to pursue any of the incentives? And if so, which ones do you think you'll pursue? And what would you suggest Jacob do with his home since he lives up in the Northeast?
That's a great question, Lori. This has been an interesting journey for me, both kind of professionally and personally, to follow the evolution of what the new administration is doing on climate. We moved into our home in January of 2020, so right before the pandemic. And of course, I was very excited. It's a beautiful space. I was all geared up to do an energy audit, and then COVID stopped everything. By the time that we were kind of ready and comfortable to let contractors back in our home, you know, the administration had taken its place and started talking about its climate and energy ambitions and goals and the things that it wanted to do. So I started following that. Obviously, both in my role as director of energy efficiency policy, but both as also as a homeowner. So we have a home that's a little over 20 years old, and it's got the original water heater in it. So I have been eyeing that. And even before we got the specifics of what would be included in either rebates or tax incentives, I had contractors come out and give me quotes. And I had, I'll say, probably about 5 contractors come out just because, you know, I had time to, I was working from home, I could be here to receive them, and I was very interested. And I asked them for 3 different quotes. I asked them for a 1-to-1 replacement of my kind of standard natural gas water heater. I asked them for a quote for a natural gas tankless, and I asked them for a quote for a heat pump water heater. I think 4 of the 5 simply ignored me when I asked them for the heat pump water heater quote. It's a newer technology. Many of our trades aren't yet familiar or comfortable with that technology. And they rightly worry that it will cause them service calls that are under warranty or, you know, kind of may cost them business. So that was an interesting kind of data point. And now that the incentives are in place and heat pump water heaters and heat pumps in general are going to be such a big ticket item within the tax code, I think we're going to see those trades kind of upskill and get familiar with some of those things. So as soon as I get a chance to do my research, we'll probably get that water heater replaced. Upstairs, I've been wanting to have an energy auditor come in, do the comprehensive look at my home, but I'm going to ask them specifically about spray foam in my attic along the roofline. The difference in the attic temperatures and my, you know, upstairs, we've got an attic hatch in the ceiling, and I've gone up there and poked my head around. It gets like 130 degrees in the summer. It's crazy. And it gets pretty chilly in the winter. So I'm interested in spray foaming that. So it's all enclosed space. And the initial conversation I had with my HVAC company was that I'm going to have to replace the natural gas furnace up there too, for air quality reasons. So we'll be looking at that kind of package, replacing that likely with a heat pump up there, getting the spray foam. And then we'll look at the energy audit report and see what else seems to be an opportunity for us. But those are kind of the prime things that I'll be looking at over the next several months as the tax incentives come into play.
So I kind of wish that the IRA came out a couple of years earlier. Because we did electrify our house. We were heating with oil. We don't have the option for gas here. So we removed all the oil from our house. We electrified, we went heat pumps. They did do the audit. We had the blower door tests where they actually, find where the leaks are. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you had an attic hatch. The coolest thing that they did, because you could actually feel a breeze. If you put your hand up next to our hatch, you could feel air flowing right there. They put this zippered, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a zippered insulation item around the hatch. So we're actually sealed. There's no airflow that can go through that hatch. I got to believe that saved a lot. They did the spray foam and all that stuff as well. We did it a little early because oil prices were really low at the time, but I am so happy that we did it, because this last year oil prices, you know, skyrocketed. And so from a cost standpoint, we're way below our costs for air conditioning and oil. And actually the strangest part is our higher electric bills now are in the winter, not the summer. Our higher electric bills are in the winter. So we're very happy with that retrofit. I just wish the IRA happened a couple years earlier.
Of course. Yeah. No, they're always going to be folks in that position. And I totally get that. But you're benefiting not only from the savings, but I imagine especially through improvements like the attic hatch ceiling from improved air quality and health, which is something that's top of mind. I'm a parent of relatively young children, and both the temperature control and the air quality themselves are major concerns to parents of young children. You know, their lungs are forming, their immune systems are still gearing up. So comfort and health are two of the things I encourage people to think about when they think about investing in these technologies and these improvements. It's not necessarily the dollar savings that drives everyone's decision here, but comfort and health can be so dramatically improved through making a home more energy efficient, because you're making it tighter, you're keeping what's outside and what belongs inside, like cooled or heated air inside. You're not mixing it with in parts of your home that aren't as healthy for you, like crawl spaces or attics. So those are hopefully some of the motivators that will drive people to do these, even if the dollars aren't kind of top of mind for them.
Yeah, we went up to MERV 16, I think, on the filtration.
Yes. Yeah, and from a cleaning point of view, you know, it keeps the dust down, right? You don't have to go up and clean your ceiling fans or lamps nearly as often. There are just so many benefits. It's complicated technology. It's not visible to a lot of people. And so we're hoping the incentives kind of create a surge of interest in and doing these things and helping people live more comfortable, healthy lives in their homes. Those are going to be bonuses for all of this.
So now that we know what we can do as homeowners and what tax credits we can receive for our buildings, what we don't know is maybe how we can send comments about what we want. So do you want to talk a little bit about how someone could comment?
Sure. So IRS, about a week and a half ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, requested comment on a number of these provisions. They basically laid out what the law is in their notices, and then they had some specific questions, but their last question always is, do you have any other comments that you'd like to make? And so that is open through November 4th. So they didn't give us a very long window. And the reason is there's a lot of people antsy for guidance. And so they're going to want to get the guidance out as quickly as possible. So there is a limited time for comments. And Lori Beth, I think you'll have an ability to, you know, post the links. Is that possible to post the links for where you do the comments?
Yes, I'll be posting it in the show notes. So feel free to visit our website, aecenter.org. You'll be able to at least get to the link to make comments.
Yeah, so the location is, it's something like regulation.gov or regulations.gov, but then you have to find your particular incentive in order to comment on it. And we'll have links provided for each of the different notices out there, so you can make comment. To the AEE community in particular, I would recommend commenting. So Section 179D has an individual called a qualified individual. The qualified individual needs to certify 179D or inspect 179D. You have to be a qualified individual. Right this second, the only eligible qualified individuals are a PE or a licensed contractor in the jurisdiction that the project happened. I would really advocate, and in my comments, when I do submit them, in my comments, I'm going to advocate for at minimum CEMs to be added to the list of eligible qualified individuals. But AE has a number of different designations that would be perfect for being eligible as qualified individuals. And I'd highly recommend that those of you with those designations, that you should reach out and comment to the IRS saying that your designation should be one of the designations allowed to be the qualified individual.
That's really awesome. Well, I have one more question for both of you. With 2030 coming very quickly, do you think having policy with incentives is going to help us achieve goals faster, or at least on time, with all of the climate goals that we have?
I'll take a swing at that. I think absolutely. And I think what's particularly helpful about the IRA, but also kind of the series of steps that the administration has taken, is that they're really embracing and directing and positioning these policies to reach those who can benefit from them most. So in our work, we focus a lot on the issue of energy insecurity, which is basically the condition that about a third of our neighbors in the Southeast face, where they have difficulty ensuring a stable heating and cooling and energy services in their homes. So they have trouble paying bills, their home is leaky, and they have a hard time simply keeping up with air conditioning units that are older and that just blow cold air out the windows or out the roof. And so these incentives and these policies have really tried to engage those communities and those individuals, because we're not going to achieve our climate goals if we don't enable everybody to participate in decarbonization, in energy efficiency, in clean energy. So that's what's giving me a lot of hope. And in our comments, we're going to be exploring opportunities to encourage the IRS to do even more for those individuals and organizations.
Just to add to that, I would say directionally, these incentives are definitely going to reduce energy use, whether they will reach there's all sorts of different goals out there, you know, the ultimate goal being net zero. I don't know that these policies will get us to net zero, but these policies are definitely directionally moving us towards that. And that's really what we need to do. We need to be moving towards that. And so I do think these policies are a great start. Like, it's just, as I mentioned before, whenever I speak about this incentive, I feel like I'm an infomercial, because there's so many nuggets out there available for all sorts. You know, you heard Cyrus talk about all the residential incentives. There's the equivalent on the commercial side, and there's all sorts of different ways to qualify. It's directionally, we're definitely moving in the right direction, and this was a giant step in that direction, I feel.
That's great. I know we barely scratched the surface today of the Inflation Reduction Act, but I really appreciate both you, Jacob, and Cyrus coming on today to talk about this. This has been Full of Energy, an AE podcast. We'll see you next month.